And good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show here at KRFY, listener-supported radio for Northern Idaho. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine, and I'm joined this morning by a slightly ill with a cold, Phil Huff. How's your voice, Phil?
I think I'll let the audience be the judge of that, but yeah, suffering a little bit from a head cold.
Yeah, although you're sounding very good. I need not have mentioned it. You're sounding so good. Yeah. This morning, we're going to be joined by a really interesting guest that we've had before, but not for a while. His name is Rich Del Carlo, and he helps organize the annual Audubon bird count. I'm not going to introduce him quite yet because we've got a weather report, but we'll be back to you in a minute, Rich. This morning's weather is going to be a little bit snowy, and I think you've noticed if you've been out or looked out your window, but it is snowing now. We're in a winter storm warning, and we're looking at snow today. It looks like some rain and snow tonight and some snow the next day. High today of 35, a low tonight of 27, a high tomorrow of 31 with snow, mostly cloudy, and then it starts to get cold. Cold, cold, cold. Sunny and cold, Phil.
Everybody wants to know how many inches, though, whether you're skiing up at the hill or shoveling your driveway. What does it look like?
Well, it looks like an accumulation, oh my goodness, of 6 to 10 inches possible. But if it turns to rain, there might be a little less of that.
Yeah, of course, around here, there's all kinds of microclimates. So everyone pretty much knows how to take that generic forecast and figure out what it means for them.
That's right. How was your drive-in?
It was a little sloppy, but not too bad. It's school's still in session, so they do a pretty good job of keeping the roads clear.
That's true. It's really good.
It's next week when school's out. You have to watch.
That's right. I'd like to remind everyone that KRFY is still in the midst of our year-end giving appeal, and we'll probably mention that again at the end of the program. But if you haven't renewed your membership or if you'd like to become a member, I would encourage you to do that. You can do that by going online to krfy.org, or you can also call us at 208-265-2992 and leave us a message and we'll be sure to return your call.
And even if you're a current member, you can make that special year-end donation and get the tax break for it. We're a registered 501c3.
That's right. Good to keep in mind. Well, Phil, this morning we've got a really interesting topic, and I think it's one that most people who listen are interested in. We're talking about birds, and we're here with Rich Del Carlo. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
It's really nice to see you, and I'm glad that you made it in on this snowy morning.
That's beautiful, actually.
Beautiful and snowy, and yes. A little slow getting in.
Now, the Christmas bird count, that's not about the number of duck or geese or turkey in the freezer intended for the oven on Christmas Day, is it?
It is not.
Okay. I'm glad we cleared that right up off the bat. Tell us about the Christmas bird count and what it is.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that in the freezer, because The Christmas bird count was started actually on December 25th, 1900.
Wow.
By an ornithologist by the name of Frank Chapman. And he did this in response to the tradition that was called Christmas tradition called side hunt in the late 1800s up to 1900, that basically on Christmas Day, people chose it was a competition, and you just went out and basically shot everything you saw, and the people that had the most were the winners. I'm not sure what the prize was, but, you know, back in the day, that's kind of how, you know, everything was expendable, and numbers were unimaginable and never-ending, and so in response to that, he started the Christmas bird count. It was actually used to be on December 25th, and then it expanded to be from the December 15th to January 4th, and any day in there was appropriate. So it's been going on basically for 117 years, and you know, accumulating all this amazing data over that time.
Right. Well, Rich, we want to hear about your history with the bird count and also Sandpoint's history. Why don't we start with your history? How long have you been helping out?
You know, I think it's probably 15 years or more. I don't know if you remember or know of Earl Chapin, but he was the kind of the original person that got it going here to establish the count circle. And I used to attend, and he, you know, he's a totally old school guy. And once we kind of started doing, when everything was reported online. He was like, I can't deal with this. I don't want to do it. And he participated for quite a while after, and then he just got into poor health. And but he's still a very, very active birder and just really a cool asset in the community to this.
So how far back did Earl establish
it? I don't remember. No. I'm not sure. I have my records are 2000. So, quite a while.
And you believe Earl started it or not? Do you think he was the beginner?
I think he was, yeah.
Okay, okay. But he went on for quite a while. So it's been going on here for some time.
It has. So even within our community, we have this, kind of visual, non-scientific data, but is still very important.
So tell us how it works. You mentioned the circle, and some people listening will have a lot of experience. They've probably been out before, and others, they might be going, this is new to me.
Yeah, well, it's, it is in some ways pretty standardized in terms of where you can count. And it's not, basically, if you want to do a start a count in, say, Barnes Ferry has a count, and Coeur d'Alene, and different communities, and you just basically kind of pick a center, and kind of you can arrange the circle to fit your, to fit where the birds are going to be, and it's a 15-mile diameter, so 7.5 miles basically in each direction, okay. A circle, and then it's broken up into different four different sections.
Okay. And do you adjust your circle a little bit from year to year, or do you try and stay with the same?
Well, you have to stay with the same format. You can kind of officially change it and move it. And that's not to say there's little bubbles in the circumference that happen, but basically it's the same circle. So, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to, you finish, but I'll ask you a question in a moment.
Oh, I was just going to say that, we don't cover the entire area at once. I mean, it's impossible. So you basically kind of do the same areas every year.
So you go back to the same spots within that circle, more or less?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I imagine I'm picturing a 15-mile radius around here, and no matter where you draw it, there's going to be some birding hotspots and some less interesting places.
Sure.
Or harder to get to places.
Right, right. Obviously, the lake, around the lake.
So how many people typically go out, and how do they organize?
Typically, anywhere from 6 to a dozen or so here. There's more people that go out in Coeur d'Alene and Bonner's Ferry, but we just typically end up with about that number.
Okay. And Rich, I've talked with people about the bird count because I was with you last year. I really enjoyed it. And a question that's come up more than once, and a question about, well, do you really get an idea of how many birds are out there? You can't see them all. You're not in all the areas. And I understand that's not what it's about. But explain to the listeners why, over the years, it helps get an idea.
Well, certainly within the circle, we have a pretty good idea of the ducks, the waterfowl. We can see big rafts of coots out there. And even that is not a precise number, because they're just so tight, and it's a educated estimation of how many coots are in a raft. And on the ducks, typically they're we're counting from the shore with a spotting scope and binoculars, but the real identification and kind of count is narrowed down with a spotting scope from shore. So we can, for sure, the lake, we know that there's ducks, waterfowl there. This time of year, bird feeders are pretty much where birds are. You could go out right now and not hear anything if you were in the forest, you know, but next to houses or in town, there's a little more bird activity. And
so are you trying to estimate the abundance as well as the variety as well as the number of species?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, basically it's not just species, but it is numbers.
And I'd like to get back to the numbers just for a moment, because it's a sort of about year-to-year counts. It's not about the count each year, right? You're kind of looking at a statistical sort of variance over the years. You're looking to see if you see increasing, decreasing. Isn't it a bit about that, not about the actual numbers from year to year?
It's actually both. Locally, we want to go out and see as many species as possible. You know, that's kind of the fun thing is adding species to that list, within the numbers. So, and then, nationwide, they can put all that data in and come up with trends and what I've seen over the years here, just in my own experience, is reductions in some numbers and species, and then increase in others.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us about those. It must have something to do with climate, et cetera. So what are some of the interesting changes you're seeing?
Well, there's, we never, up until about 5 years ago, we never saw Eurasian collar doves on the bird count, and maybe one. And now there's, some places, particularly at feeders, there could be 30. So I think we've actually had maybe upwards of like 60 Eurasian collar doves on counts, whereas that was something that wasn't even here. And then...
And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Why are we interested in those doves?
They're an introduced bird. They started in Florida, and they've just been able to expand their range. Apparently, they don't seem to have a negative impact on, say, mourning doves, as an introduced species. But they are just very adaptable.
So obviously there can be great variances year to year.
Yes.
Based on the weather, and probably based too on how many folks you have out in the field, but you can get some rough numbers, at least get some ideas of trends.
Yes. You're right. I mean, time of day, timing, there's places where, this time of year, the birds are, especially like chickadees and nuthatches, and they kind of move around these little flocks, almost like tropical species, where they're flocked up in mixed flocks, and they typically don't do that the rest of the year. But this year, this time of the year, they're just kind of looking for food together and hang out more.
Either see a lot of them or none of them.
That's exactly right.
You mentioned feeders, so within the 15-mile circus circle. Probably a circus too.
Bird circus.
The attraction to the shoreline seems pretty obvious, but tell us about the feeders. Do you go back to the same ones every year?
Yes. Or
are those in folks' yards?
And there is the opportunity for people to, if they're within the count circle, to submit sightings from their feeder. I do not have any of those set up on our count, but other counts do. I just want to go back to, we were talking about trends a little bit. And one thing I have noticed a reduction of is waterfowl on the lake, particularly redhead ducks. And we used to see rafts of 10, 20,000 redheads mixed with scop and ringnecks. But we're seeing a lot less of those. Those are diving ducks, redhead, ringneck, and scop. We're seeing less of those, and there's no real I mean, there are some indicators. You know, it's all related to habitat, basically, on breeding grounds. And
possibly weather, too. I suspect if you plug that data into a data set that includes the region or the nation, there might be evident variances that show a north-south shift based on the seasonality and climate trends.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know something about redheads nationally? Have their numbers been reduced all over, or are you just noticing that locally?
I'm noticing that locally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the latest report from Audubon on the state of birds is that, you know, there are some birds that are in serious trouble that will be affected vastly by climate change, and all bird numbers are kind of trending down, except for geese.
Ah, yes.
Geese, even geese that nest in the Arctic, are expanding their range. They're able to winter further south than they ever were. You know, obviously we have a huge population of Canada goose here. So geese and I think swans are increasing, and that's actually going to be problematic for other birds because they are fairly competitive.
Can I add turkeys to that list?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Good.
Yeah. Turkeys are really interesting. You know, they were introduced here, mm-hmm. and they've just totally expanded. And it's incredible because they're a ground nesting bird, a big bird that nests on the ground, and with coyotes and dogs and disturbance, you'd think that would be hard. But
now we have more than one species of turkey here locally, I understand.
Well, there's the wild turkey, and then they can hybridize with domestic turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you'll see an all white or a partially white turkey in a flock, and that's one that had, you know, as a result of a hybridization.
Right.
I have seen that,
but it's just basically one species.
Okay.
So, Rich, I'd like to talk about last year's Christmas bird count, because I joined you, and that was the first one that I've been on. And for one thing, it was terribly cold and windy.
It was really cold.
Yes, and it made for quite a chilly day. But we had one interesting bird, an interesting experience with one species of bird that I don't think you expected to see so many of.
Mm.
And it was a varied...
Varied thrush?
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. And what a pretty bird.
And that was noted in the results, the national results, that there was an influx of varied thrushes into the kind of northwest region, and they were documented as far pretty much all through Idaho on the Christmas bird counts, and Washington and Montana as well. And I haven't seen one this year at all.
Don't think I have.
We have them around here, but they're more of a summertime bird. Is
right,
that right?
Right.
Their sound is very distinctive.
Yeah. And what we saw last year was virtually every crabapple tree that we saw had three or four up to 10 buried thrushes in it.
So was the surprise that they're not normally seen this time of year, or was the surprise in the numbers of buried thrushes seen?
I think it was the time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically we'll see maybe one. You have to work for it. You know, sometimes you can hear them. They call. They have that whistle. But
yeah, they've got that distinctive sound. I know we had one around our house for a long time. When we were first trying to figure out what it was.
Right.
And it seemed like it took several weeks. It may have been just several days to track down the animal that was making that noise, because they hide well and they're small for the size of the sound.
They are. They kind of like the dense woods, more moist, and that's where they nest. You know, they're more conifer related.
So, do you record some of what you find by sound only, or is it always visually verified?
Oh, totally. If you're aware of the calls, then yes, absolutely. So that kind of brings me to point one thing I know you wanted to talk about was who who can participate in a count, and basically anybody is welcome. But you know, in the interest of being able to identify birds and kind of assure the accuracy of counts, you know, I do need knowledgeable bird folks also. And there's a lot of knowledgeable people. You know, there's myself and a few others that are just complete nerds and can identify just about every bird. But, you know, everybody is welcome. And one of the goals is really to, you know, increase the awareness and appreciation for birds, because anytime we do that, we're, you know, as you know, we're probably aiding in their conservation, because awareness helps with, you know, more people understanding their needs.
So walk us through what the day might look like, what the typical Christmas bird count day looks like from start to finish.
We meet for breakfast around 6:30, get together and figure out who's here and who, you know, and then assign people into groups. And hopefully I have four knowledgeable leaders to lead people around. And, you know, everybody actually is valuable, because somebody will go, hey, what's that? And then nobody else saw, and then we're able to see it. But so then we, you know, head out in groups at the one we can kind of see, and just basically kind of go through try and cover as much as we can in that in those sections, stopping, looking, listening, walking. It's mostly driving. That's just, you know, the nature of it. That's the way it is. Unless we had a lot of people and you could intensively walk certain sections. And then at the end of the day, we meet back up, generally have a beer and something to eat, and that's fun. It's yeah. Really great just being able to tally the birds, and everybody gets to kind of share their experiences through the day.
And so how long are they out in the field? What's the end of the day?
Basically, light till dark. The count is actually in a 24-hour period. So you could, you know, we could start, we actually could go out at midnight tonight and
listen
for owls.
Sure.
Exactly.
I suppose.
And you know, we can use recordings, you know, we could call in an owl. We don't do that, but that is the, and by the way, the count is tomorrow.
Yes.
Right.
And in the North Country, it might be a little less appealing than in Southern areas to be out in the middle of the night counting owls.
That's true. And I'm imagining here close to the solstice, though, conditions might be less desirable than the summer, but the day's a whole lot shorter, too. You're not out there as long.
That's true.
Right.
But the conditions are a little... Yeah. Tomorrow is actually rougher. Supposed to be a pretty decent day. But like Julia was saying, you know, there's days when it is...
Pretty tough.
Yeah, and one year, I don't know if you were there, but a couple of years ago, it was just pea soup fog all day long. And absolutely nothing was moving because the air was so dense, and you couldn't even see a duck on the water. It was miserable. That was not fun.
That would be tough.
I think if we reread the forecast for tomorrow, it's not necessarily conducive to this.
Well,
snow showers likely.
Yeah, I mean, not going to be. Yeah. It's actually going to be all right. That's actually a really nice day.
Okay, Rich,
it's sun in the afternoon.
Is it too late for people to join?
No,
can they still call?
No, they can. They can call me or email me. Phone number 208-290-4000. 1405.
Okay.
That would be the easiest.
And that, they can still join up. And
I have my ringer off right now, so don't call me right now.
No. You'll call back. Leave a message. And you'll let them know where to meet up, and it'll just go from there. Well, very good.
So I'm curious about the day. Is it the 20th of December every year?
No.
How do you decide what day it'll be?
That's kind of random, and it's based on, you know, I try and coordinate it with the other counts in the area. Like Bonner's Ferry count is going to be on the 28th. Coeur d'Alene had theirs on the 15th. Newport, Washington had theirs on the 16th. So, you know, I had been out of town for a couple weeks, so I
Had to fit it in.
Yeah, I had to fit it in.
And you do want to fit it in with the others, and it sounds as though if people are enjoying the one we have tomorrow, they could still join in with the Bonner's Ferry group.
Yeah.
So that's nice. Well, I think that tells us enough about the bird count that if folks would like to join in, they might consider that, and I hope that they will. Let's take a short song break and come back to other bird-related topics for winter. You are at KRFY, listener-supported radio for North Idaho, and we're at our end of... And that was the Steve Miller Band with Fly Like an Eagle.
Yeah, and we've been talking about eagles, and we're going to talk more. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio from North Idaho, and we're here this morning with Rich Del Carlo, who has been leading the Great Christmas Bird Count for some number of years now. Welcome back to this half the show.
Thank you.
And as we've just heard the song about eagles, I know, Rich, you've told us before you haven't been down there, but it's an interesting topic, eagles in this area and the lakes and the coots. What's going on with that?
Well, you know, the eagles are, especially in Coeur d'Alene, are concentrating there because of the fish, the kokanee. So, and that has become a, you know, almost an ecotourism thing. People are going out in the lake to view great big numbers of eagles.
And the numbers seem to be on an upward trend for the last 5 years or so. Significant increases in the numbers they spot every year. I read in the paper the other day that over 330 were spotted one day last week.
Wow.
Which is, I think, double or triple the amount 10 years ago.
That's a lot.
It is.
So, yeah, the coots are getting scared.
Yeah. Well, that's another interesting topic about eagles, because growing up in Minnesota, I lived on a lake, and every fall the ice would freeze on our lake and the coots would get in a smaller and smaller circle, and then the eagles would show up. So coots are a food for eagles, aren't they?
They are. Yes. Yeah. You know, and the birds, the coots, concentrate in those rafts for protection. And the eagle... And it's the same with a peregrine falcon hunting shorebirds or something. You know, this concentration of birds is almost a impenetrable mass that they can't get into. So I'm sure you've seen, even just driving across the Long Bridge, those eagles working those rafts. And what they're trying to do is fluster them enough to where one gets isolated, and they can pick one
out. It's easier to pick one out than it is one.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if like you're saying in Minnesota, when they get concentrated in a tiny patch of ice, they are certainly more vulnerable.
Yes.
Eagles are really opportunistic. They'll eat dead fish. They'll eat basically whatever they can. And
their rafting up also stirs up the water and keeps it a little more open for them.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. And that's the case with you know, big groups of ducks, is that they can help keep the ice open.
Well, we see some mini congregations of eagles around Lake Pondre. I've noted at times at places where you typically will see one or maybe two eagles through the year, there might be half a dozen or more. And in some places, the old fish hatchery along like Lakeshore Drive, I've seen as many as two dozen.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're, you know, there's food there.
They're working the shallows.
Yeah, and, you know, you'll see them along the railroad tracks eating deer that have been hit, or even along the road. So wherever there's food, they're going to be. And obviously this is, you know, a tough time of year for everything.
Eagles are a great success story of our efforts nationally to conserve wildlife, especially birds. And I think we want to come to that topic soon. But tell us a little bit more about some of the unique aspects of winter birding, what we might find in the winter that we might not at other times of year.
Well, like I mentioned, you know, the birds are kind of, you can walk through the woods it'll just be dead quiet. And then you can hear, you know, a chickadee. And then all of a sudden, there'll be a dozen chickadees flying around. And then 5 minutes later, they'll all be gone. This is more of a time opportunity maybe to see a pygmy owl. I had one that spent 4 or 5 days near my feeder eating a mourning dove last year. So there's, you know, there's that opportunity. I remember one day just walking along the in the snow along the beach, the shoreline out at Sunnyside, and happened to see, look down, and there was the imprint of a of an eagle wing where it had actually kind of come down and just touched the snow, but you could see every primary defined on that from that bird, and that was really nice experience as well.
So we have an opportunity to see signs of birds, if not the birds themselves.
And you're not going to see numbers. You're not going to see, you know, lots of species. But you know, there's always the opportunity for just something really, really unique.
Yeah, and watching some of the small birds work the shrubbery that the leaves have dropped. I'm thinking like the snowberry plants. That
yes,
great opportunities to observe small birds.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about birds in winter and what they're eating and feeding and just basically conservation. Phil and I were talking about whether feeders are a good idea, a bad idea. Why don't you tell us more about that?
I have 6 feeders at my house that I just use sunflower seeds. Mm. I don't put massive amounts of seed in there. So that the birds can kind of clean them out, and then I put more in there, because sanitation is really important. You can get bacteria and fungus in those clumps of seeds that just get decayed, and it's a real problem with finches. They get a disease in their eye. So if you ever see a house finch that kind of looks like it's, you know, has you know, a swollen eye or something, that's typically from a feeder. So it can be a problem. But I also use suet. Woodpeckers really like suet. I try and get just cuttings from the butcher of just fat. We have to be aware of you know, just about everything that we use for birds and us in terms of how it's produced and what is used on it. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of probably remnants of things, chemicals or whatever, in bird food as well. So, you know, we always have to kind of be aware of that.
So how often should someone with a bird feeder clean out their bird feeder?
If there are seed shells that are left in there or seeds that aren't getting eaten and there's kind of a wet mass in there, that definitely should be cleaned out. And under the feeder as well. Because, you know, there's, you know, a lot of times the sparrows will get in there and just scratch around and kick seeds out, and flickers will use their bill to flip seeds out. So
a lot of people have feeders, and also in the summer, spring and fall, water for the birds. How important is they keep water out and keep it clean?
Water is real important. We have a couple bird baths that are used certainly in the summer, and then you can get a bird water heater that you can put in a bird bath this time of year. Dripping water is always appealing,
especially to cats.
Is it? Yes, it is. Should we talk cats right now? Cats and birds.
Bird feeders do concentrate birds, and so it concentrates an area for prey, which I don't know how far down the rabbit hole we want to go with that, but outdoor cats are a major predatory on birds.
That is an absolute reality. If you have, I mean, even if you don't have bird feeders and you have a cat, you know, they are efficient, stealthy hunters. They're really good at what they do. And you know, there's so much that we are unaware of that's going on in the natural world that Cats are a big deal.
I understand there's a collar or something cats can wear that's more than just a bell. That's very effective. I've read about it.
I don't know that. I don't have a cat.
No, but I understand there's a new cat collar.
But there's a strong reason to have indoor cats, or if you're hanging a bird feeder out of doors, make sure that it's not easily gotten to.
Right.
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 And other predators will keep an eye on bird feeders.
Absolutely. That's, to me, that's one of the added benefits of feeding chickadees and mourning doves and flickers is that, you know, I get to see, not only do I get to see, but I'm ensuring the survival of a pygmy owl or a Cooper's hawk or a merlin. And some people, take offense to that, but that's kind of part of it too. And yeah, I'm setting the table for a hawk, but you know, they got to live too.
How do you lure the turkeys in, especially here a few days
before Christmas? You don't have to lure them.
Not needed.
No. What you're trying to do is kick them out of the yard.
But it does lead us to the larger topic of conservation. And we do want all the species taken care of. And that's kind of a changing dynamic these days, isn't it?
It certainly is. We have on the big picture, we have climate change. And that is huge. We have we have species that are going to be pushed out of areas and able to move into areas. You've got habitat loss, just even locally, an area gets cleared. That's not a place where birds can live. You have pollution, plastics in the water, pesticides, human population. That's just a reality that. Where masses numbers of humans live, there's not as many birds can live there. And then, when we bring it down and we focus it to us individually, I was looking last night and I saw this statistic in several places. They estimate that 1 billion birds are killed by collisions with flying into windows.
Wow.
And we have a fairly small house, don't have giant windows on it, and I've had birds fly into small windows. So giant plate glass windows that have that reflect what it is that the birds see trees and the sky reflected in the window. Mm-hmm. They cannot
They're not able to differentiate.
They're not able to differentiate, and they just fly right into them. So that is actually a huge thing. And, even places that have, like, if you glass around decks and you have a feeder there, birds fly right into those too.
So point being, we need to all of us be aware of that, and what are the solutions?
There are solutions. New construction, there's actually glass that is somewhat less reflective or things, and that was kind of the option that the Viking Stadium had in Minnesota. I don't know if you've heard about that, but they Minneapolis is on the Central Flyway on the Mississippi River, and there's lots of glass buildings in Minneapolis, but they put up the stadium at the opposition and of many groups to do it a little differently, to redesign it. And they said no. And
So are there things that homeowners with plate glass can do? Is
yes,
it better to keep the drapes open or closed? Can they put decals or stickers?
Well,
up?
Decals do not actually work. I've tried that. That you can do a shade, especially on the outside. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. What I've done is, and I now have all of the windows that around my house have this over it, because the ones I didn't, I still had birds hitting. I put a black mesh net, that you would put over a cherry tree or something to keep the birds off.
Sure.
And it's about anywhere from 6 inches to a foot away, and it's tight. And So it's just basically a trampoline. Them. They just, if they fly into it, they bounce off. And I've actually seen that happen.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, it is not visible. You know, like after a day, you don't even see it.
It's a little like a screen, maybe. I've noticed when they bump into my window screens, it's okay. But if they hit the window, boy, it's bad.
There's lots of, there are other options, you know, but that's one that that's cheap and has worked for me. There's a couple places, you know, there's the American Bird Conservancy, Cornell Lab, All About Birds, and that has information about that.
How best? Kind of,
I mean, you can just Google bird collisions
too. Sure. That was about my next question, would be bird resources, and you've given us a couple. And, you know, additionally, bird apps can be fun too. And even though we're running down on time, I know that one I've used has been Merlin, and they help you identify birds and they help get to know your birds. Have you used others similar?
There's one that that Audubon has that I have on my phone that is great, that I've used in the field for bird songs and identification. Mm-hmm. There's lots of stuff out there.
Okay.
What are some of your favorite ones that combine that visual aspect as well as the auditory?
Well, the one that, like I said, was the Audubon app.
Okay, and just go Google Audubon. And
you could just Google bird watching apps.
Yeah.
And there's a dozen or so. Some of them are free.
They're really helpful in the field these days with a smartphone and listening to the song. If you're new to it and can't quite identify by sound, they're really helpful.
Yes,
right.
For sure.
Well, it sounds like for the home birder, the home person with a bird feeder, we want to try and prevent killing off our birds by having them run into our windows and keep the feeders clean and watered. That would be probably good starting advice.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And keep your cats indoors.
Keep the cats in. Those are important, very important. Rich, we're going to finish with our interview shortly. Would you like to just wrap up by reminding us again about the Christmas bird event and how folks might reach you and encourage folks to help out tomorrow?
We are meeting tomorrow morning at 6:30 at Fifth Avenue Restaurant, and we'll go out and look for birds all day. You can reach me at 208-290-1405, or I'm sure if you listen to the radio, you've have my email programmed into your brain listening to Jim. It's rich@peregrinetree.com.
That's right. Rich, you are. We must
and
disclose
I won't spell
you
it
are
for
an
you
underwriter.
Because you probably
You're
know
an
how
underwriter.
To.
Yes.
Yeah. So if someone comes out tomorrow, what should they be prepared? Obviously warm clothes.
Yes.
What else should they bring along?
Well, something to eat, you know, something to drink, snack on during the day. If you have binoculars, bring those. And just bring a smile and an open mind.
That's right. And know that Rich, as an underwriter with Peregrine Trees, is a great expert on birds. He's a great person to hang along with and enjoy the Christmas bird count with. And you know plants, you know birds, you know trees, you know everything. It's great
I don't know
to spend
everything.
Time with you.
Well, sometime close to the spring planting season, we'll have to have you back and talk a little about landscaping for birds.
I'd love to do that, yeah.
And that'll be a great show. We'll plan it.
Okay. Well, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in today.
You're welcome. Enjoy
it. Very, very interesting. Well, let's take. And that was The Beatles with Blackbird. And we are at KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And
do you suppose they were talking about red-winged blackbirds?
Well, maybe yellow-headed. I don't know, Phil. Hard to know with The Beatles.
It's always a wonderful song, though. The Beatles are great.
They are. And most songs about birds are good ones, but not all. And that was a good one. Phil, we had a great interview with Rich Del Carlo, and hoping that we'll be able to encourage folks to join Rich on the annual bird count. It will be good to get lots of numbers in and see what's happening with the bird population up here.
And I think important to stress, while knowledgeable birders are very helpful, as Rich pointed out, even someone who can simply look at what's going by and go, oh, what's that? Out of curiosity. So it's important to have folks come out with a great deal of curiosity, because this really fills in that knowledge.
So true. And we always need someone just to tally up birds and put it in the notebook. So even if you have very little bird skill, we need some people that'll be willing to even do that. And it's mostly in the car, so you don't have to be a super athlete either. Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's happening in the upcoming week. It's the Christmas week.
What morning shows do we have coming up?
Yes, we've got a few. Tomorrow, plan to join morning show hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. They will be visiting with a group of community religious leaders to have a conversation around the reason for the season during this Christmas season. A second segment will be recorded interview with one of the Reclaim Idaho founders, Luke Mayville. That will be tomorrow morning, Wednesday at 8 a.m. And then Thursday, we'll be having our Thursday morning show with hosts Jack Peterson and Carrie Logan with an unannounced topic. So that'll be interesting.
Their specialty.
To be announced. And how about next Tuesday? Next
Tuesday, we have Amanda Thomas.
Yes, we do. She's a counselor, a local marriage and family therapist here in the Sandpoint area, and she's going to be doing a pre-recorded interview with us, and the topic will be mental health over the holidays, and that's a pretty important topic.
I think something that's important for all of us. Everyone has someone they know or is themselves touched by issues, especially around the holidays. So it's an important time to reflect on what the resources are available to deal with that.
Yeah, very much so. And even for folks that are mentally healthy, good time to think about being healthy and helping others if you can. So that'll be an interesting program next week, day after Christmas.
All right. So as we wind down the year, it's important to remind everybody that year-end donations for many nonprofits are a very important time. It's a time when we can renew our commitment to the nonprofits we cherish. So if you're not a member, you can become a member of KRFY. Or if you're an existing member and want to renew your membership, you can do that too. And you could also make a special year-end donation. You can go to our website at krfy.org and use the secure PayPal button. Or you can send a check to KRFY PO Box 2465, Sandpoint, Idaho 83864. It's really important that the community supports community-supported radio, keeping folks like us, Julie and I, and the other volunteers who provide content on the air.
That's right. And you can even call 208-265-2992, and that's an easy way. We aren't always at the phone. Just go ahead and leave a message. We'll return your call and get you going, get a new membership or an additional donation. We'll appreciate it.
And as we wind down towards the count towards Christmas, there's still a fair number of things going on in town. But as you might imagine, the weekend becomes more about family and guests and spending time with loved ones and cherished ones. But December 20th through January 3rd, the Panda Theater will be hosting a showing of The Greatest Showman, starring Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron. The film just received 3 Golden Globe nominations, including Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy, Best Original Song, and Best Performance by an Actor, Jackman. Showtimes and more are at the Sandpoint Movie Pages or at Panda.org, another one of our fine local nonprofits.
That's right.
Love going to movies there. It's the old classic Art Deco theater, and when they host a film, it's much more engaging and interactive, it seems like, than some of the more less interesting places, shall we say.
It's true, and I know there's going to be live music coming up there, too.
So another entertainment on Friday night, Sadie Cecilia and Desiree are performing a duo performance, a special Christmas party. Come out and enjoy their holiday show at the Little Panda Theater, right next to the main Panda Theater. Starting at 6 p.m., it features Sadie on vocals. She's accompanied by classically trained piano player Desiree. They'll be performing Christmas music mixed with some originals, jazz, and blues. Tickets are available at Panda.org. Most importantly, for you men, and some would say have procrastinated, I would say started your shopping early on the 22nd, Men's Shopping Night in downtown Sandpoint from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. You'll get the kid glove treatment with help selecting the perfect gift, wrapping, refreshments, and more. So take the hassle out of this holiday season by focusing on what is most meaningful, family and community, and buying your gifts early on the 22nd.
Phil, are you going to be out around town doing your Christmas shopping?
Truth be told, most of mine's done. So, but I still go out on Men's Shopping Night because it's as much a social occasion as it is actual gift buying time.
That sounds like a fun event. I might have to sneak out and see what men are out.
Assuming you're kicking Daniel towards that direction.
That would be a good thing for him. I don't know if we'll get him out for that.
And any particular holiday traditions in your household for the days right before Christmas?
Boy, nothing special. I'm from Phil, I don't know if I've shared this with you, but my family was a Christmas tree farm family. We raised and grew and retailed Christmas trees. So I've had plenty of Christmas over the years. I play it pretty low key.
Do they ship you a Christmas tree at this time of the year?
They used to when I was in Minnesota. They don't ship to Idaho, though.
Do you go out and try to stalk down a live one?
I did this year with a friend, but I'm light. I just actually put lights on a living tree. Can you imagine how... how environmentally and Christmas tree friendly I've become.
I will say, we decorate inside, including the ficus tree.
Good for you. What do the cats think?
They like the baubles.
That's great.
And they like the lights. Flicking them on and off. You can drive them crazy.
I would think so.
So there are a few things going on this weekend. On the 23rd, on Saturday, come listen to a talk about organic seed saving. You can discuss organic gardening and seed saving at 1 p.m. at the Sandpoint Library. That's at 1407 Cedar Street. You can bring food and seeds to share. It sounds like a fun, festive potluck and a good way to spend a little bit of holiday time learning more about organic seed saving. On the 23rd, if you have not quite had enough Christmas cheer yet, you can go to the annual Ugly Sweater Contest. It's Ugly Sweater Time again at A&P Tavern at 222 North 1st Avenue, where they host the annual Ugly Sweater Contest from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. The prizes will be bigger and better than ever.
Who doesn't have an ugly sweater? I know I've got several.
Well, you'll have to loan them out because I don't think I have any.
Oh, dear. I will loan you one. Well, as we wrap up the hour, we're going to be going out with another song about birds. This one will be Snowbird with Anne Murray. And I'd just like to wish everyone a happy holiday, a great Christmas, and same to you, Phil.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. We'll be back next.